Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. And I want to first thank Sean Carlson, our newscaster, and Shamita Basu for kicking off our COVID-19 matching fund a few minutes ago. They laid it out, so I'm not going to dwell on it. We'll get right to our first guest, Dr. Ashish Jha. But just to reinforce and help to launch it, starting right now and for the next 2 hours, the WNYC Board of Trustees will match every dollar that you donate to our very short spring fundraiser at wnyc.org or 888-376-WNYC. The station has had very large extra expenses, like to set everybody up to broadcast from home in the COVID-19 period, and we have lost income like so many news organizations. But nonetheless, because of the COVID-19 crisis, we are not going to do our usual 9-day spring membership drive. We're only going to do 3 days because we know that you all need uninterrupted programming. So thank you to the members of our Board of Trustees. They're all volunteers to begin with, and now they'll be on the edge of their seats for the next 2 hours, seeing how much of their money you make them give away. It's a 2-hour COVID-19 Board of Trustees matching fund just for the Brian Lehrer Show today. So listeners, thank you in advance for doing your part, no matter how small, because it's times two right now in this dollar-for-dollar matching period in its impact. And the way you donate is to go to our website, wnyc.org, or call on the phone, 888-376-WNYC. 888-376-9692. Thank you so much for considering it this morning. Now, there's so much science news the last few days. A vaccine trial that made the stock market go up. People who had apparently recovered becoming positive again. Trump taking chloroquine as a preventive measure. Governor Cuomo saying again that people winding up in the hospital are mostly not those going out to work. The state of Georgia closing in on a month after reopening that even President Trump called premature, and the average number of new cases has not spiked or gone down. And businesses like the Ford Motor Company reopening, but saying they do not need to test every worker to keep the others safe. Here is Ford President Jim Hackett answering a question about that on Morning Edition yesterday from NPR's Noel King.
You plan to test workers who exhibit symptoms of COVID-19. I do wonder, why not offer tests to everyone, given that we know many people who get this virus don't have symptoms, but they can spread it? Why would you only test people who exhibit the symptoms?
Well, Dr. Fauci and the Business Roundtable have been having weekly sessions, along with Robert Redfield from the CDC, and one of our well-known CEOs asked Dr. Fauci, why don't I just test every employee in my company every day? And the answer to that is it's not practical here at the beginning, particularly with us, where we'll be over 200,000 people. There will be a day, Noel, that your question can be answered that way. It's not too far off. And it revolves around a daily quick test. Now, here's the news, though. If you have symptoms, we can test right away. And so we've built that fail safe. So if you're asymptomatic and you don't have a fever and we haven't tested you, then we would contact trace if anyone around you got sick.
Ford Motor Company President Jim Hackett on Morning Edition. With me now, Dr. Ashish Jha, director of the Harvard Global Health Institute and about to start as the dean of the Brown University School of Public Health. Thanks very much for joining us again, Dr. Jha. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, thanks so much for having me back on.
So let's start on that Ford Motor Company story, because it represents a decision every business will have to make at some level. How much testing of workers is enough to provide safety to all the workers? He said people with symptoms, but not every worker because they don't have enough tests. How much protection is that, since we know that many virus spreaders are asymptomatic?
Yeah, so I think it's a start. I would do it a little differently. Obviously, testing people who are symptomatic is very important. But we think about half the spread is from people who don't have symptoms at that moment. Some of those people will never go on to develop symptoms. Other people will go on to develop symptoms later. And so obviously testing every worker every day is impractical. But there are lots of things we can do between only testing symptomatic people and testing every worker every day. And I think that you have to have some sort of a surveillance system for asymptomatic people as well. And I think that would actually just increase the level of safety of workers in these plants.
How do you have a surveillance system for asymptomatic workers? Because the Ford president in that soundbite seemed to suggest to Noel King that when enough tests are available, they will test every worker regularly.
Yeah, so there are tools out there, Brian, that allow you to do a lot more testing with limited number of test kits. I mean, first and foremost, I think we got to continue pushing on more testing, right? Like, just more testing capacity will get us out of a lot of these binds, and we can do that as a country. We need to focus more on that and have more leadership around that. But even with the testing capacity we have, there are things like pooling of tests. So instead of every test really being used for one person, imagine you took 100 samples and you ran one test against that entire 100 samples. And you got a negative. You could clear all those 100 workers and know none of them were infected. If you got a positive, then you got to go test each person individually. But there are those kinds of strategies that people can use to make the number of test kits we have go much, much further and create a surveillance system that doesn't require millions of tests.
All right, next story. The company Moderna successfully tests a vaccine on 8 people. So 8 people is a tiny, minuscule, very small sample, but all 8 developed antibodies to the virus. And that news, as you know, made the stock market go up yesterday. How do you see the significance of this early result?
Yeah, so I think we have to sort of look at both the cautionary side of this and the positive side of this. So let's start on the cautionary side. You actually laid them out, Brian. 8 people. The antibodies that were generated, neutralize the virus in the lab. We're not 100% sure it actually protects humans. So there's a lot here that we don't know. That said, I saw this as relatively good news, and it reminded me that it really does seem like this is a virus where we should be able to generate immunity through vaccines. And so, do I think it's going to be the Moderna vaccine? I have no idea. It might be, might not be. But there are, at least 8 or 10 vaccine efforts that are in clinical trials, and it gave me much more confidence that one of them will end up working out.
However, here's a worrisome story about what having antibodies might or might not mean. It's about people recovering from COVID-19, but then apparently getting it again. And here's a version of that story from Politico. 13 sailors aboard the aircraft carrier USS Theodore Roosevelt have tested positive again for COVID-19 after recovering from the disease and returning to the ship. Sailors in early May began showing symptoms of the virus, such as a cough and fever, despite testing negative twice. So, Dr. Jha, what does this apparent cluster of relapse cases tell you?
Yeah, so first of all, I'm not 100% sure, just to be very honest. The big question here is, are these people truly getting reinfected, or is there something else going on? And, I'm not 100% sure, but I'll give you my best guess, Brian. My best guess is these people are not getting reinfected, that I still believe all the evidence points me to the idea that once you have truly cleared the virus, you are going to be protected for a while. That's where the best evidence is. So then what explains this? It could be that they had false negatives, that the 2 times they got negative tests, those tests were false negatives. We know that sometimes the tests are false negatives. It also could be that they're having false positives now, that we know people continue to shed fragments of the virus for quite a long time, and that they never truly cleared it. Or they cleared it, but it's just a false positive now because they have fragments. So I think that combination of explanations is much more likely. Again, am I 100% sure? I'm not. But that's where I think is probably a much more likely of an explanation than somehow these people are getting reinfected.
Listeners, if you're just joining us, we're going over some of the many fascinating COVID-19 science stories in the news with Dr. Ashish Jha, director of the Harvard Global Health Institute and about to start as the dean of the Brown University School of Public Health. State of Georgia, Dr. Jha, fascinating story. April 23rd was the day they partly reopened against the advice of Dr. Fauci, Dr. Birx, the mayor of Atlanta, even President Trump denounced that one. But now, almost a month later, and the average number of new cases in the state is about the same as it was on the date the reopening started. That's about 700 new cases a day on average in Georgia. There's been no further improvement, that means, but also no spike from the reopening. What are the implications for how we reopen everywhere else?
Yeah, so look, I also was worried about Georgia and thought that they would see an increase. And so it's worth thinking about what have they done right. You know, skeptics would say, well, it's still early and it takes, you know, 4 to 6 weeks for the all the extra activity to start really showing up on testing and new cases. That's right. And so we may still see it yet. It may be telling us a few other things. It may be telling us that getting people outside and get, you know, the weather is such that people are going out. And I actually believe that there's more and more data that being outside is you know, dramatically lowers the risk of transmission. And that's why I think policies that get people outside of their homes and are probably a good thing. And of course, it's not like they've opened up and gone back to completely normal. They've been exercising a certain amount of social distancing, et cetera. So I think this is, again, this is good news, and it may suggest that we have more degrees of freedom on opening up than we thought. But, you know, let's not use one example to throw out the entire understanding of the virus and transmission. Let's keep looking at Georgia, look at other states. There's some other states like Texas that are seeing, you know, lots of cases. So it's a bit of a mixed picture. And for me, on a personal level, it's a reminder to be humble about what we know and what is going to happen, because there's still a lot we're learning about the virus.
Can you make that contrast between Georgia and Texas in a little more detail? Because Texas also reopened earlier than a lot of people thought they should, and they are seeing more new cases?
Yeah, Texas cases have been going up. Now, can I tell you for sure it's because of their reopening? I can't, though I'm pretty sure the reopening hasn't helped. But the, you know, their case numbers have largely been in rising overall. So that's why I said it's a mixed picture, and we have to spend more time sorting out, you know, what's different between these two states, and why is it working out better in one than another. I have to tell you right now, today, I can't tell you for sure, and we do need to sort this out.
New York still has twice as many new cases a day as Georgia, and Governor Cuomo says two-thirds of people being admitted to hospitals recently were staying home, that is, retired or unemployed, according to the surveys of those patients, not out as essential workers. I have a friend who calls this the immaculate infection, and I saw you were quoted briefly in a Forbes article about why this might be happening. What's your best theory?
Yeah, so my best theory is not so much that being at home, you know, these people sort of magically got infected, but they probably live at home with other people, and they live at home with people who may be out as essential workers, taking subway, working in grocery stores, working in places where they're getting infected. Remember, we're looking at hospitalization, so it's not a question of who's gotten infected. It's who's ended up getting hospitalized. And what's important about that is what we know is that if you're older, if you have chronic disease, you're much more likely to be hospitalized. Those people may be staying home but getting infected by a family member who has gotten infected and come home and spread the virus. So that's my best theory, is that what we're seeing is older, sicker people picking up those infections and then getting hospitalized. It doesn't tell me anything about whether stay-at-home orders were good or not. I still feel very confident that those stay-at-home orders, I wish they had happened a couple of weeks earlier than they did, but clearly were responsible for bringing the disease under control in New York.
And finally, the president taking hydroxychloroquine as a preventive measure. I saw doctors on MSNBC last night who said the risk to his heart is greater than the preventive potential for COVID, But I saw doctors on Fox who said this drug is given early as prophylaxis in Europe and elsewhere and for various conditions. And the little science that does exist suggests that's actually how it does the most good, early in an infection. So what's the purely medical, neither side's politics, including the uncertainties, data on this from someone like you, for someone of his weight, his COVID risk, and his cardiac health?
Yeah. So if I were his personal physician, I would very, very strongly recommend against him taking it, and I'll explain why. I am not aware of any credible science that shows that giving this preventively helps reduce the risk of getting infected or reduces the risk of having a severe infection. That evidence just doesn't exist. There are people who are obviously doing those studies now, and obviously the evidence could change, but that evidence does not exist. And yet we do know the drug has toxicities. Most drugs have some level of toxicity. This one is certainly no exception. And when I look at the risk-benefit profile here, to me, this is not a close call. As a physician, I would say, if you were my patient, this is much more likely to do harm than good, and therefore I would not recommend it.
And the political question is, why is Trump so invested in making a point about one drug that may or may not be helpful for some people? I think it's because he was first peddling chloroquine as a reason not to worry too much about the whole pandemic. He stuck his neck out too far, and now he's trying to save face, taking it himself to try and show he didn't make a fool of himself, but he risked making a further fool of himself. Are you, as a science data person, allowed to have an opinion about that?
Well, I have opinions on all sorts of things, but you know, it is puzzling to me why the president has decided that this is the one that he's really going to make a big deal. I mean, you know, if he had used remdesivir or some other drug where there was both more plausible, mechanism, and of course now we have pretty good evidence behind it, I would feel much better that he was picking something that was evidence based. I've been baffled about by his love of hydroxychloroquine, really from the early days. I don't understand it. It's not some big expensive drug where there's somebody's going to have a big financial payoff. As I said, I'm baffled.
Dr. Ashish Jha, he's been coming on previously as director of the Harvard Global Health Institute. I see you're about to start as dean of the Brown University School of Public Health. It's a little like going from the Red Sox to the Yankees, isn't it?
I'm not going to comment on that in the New York City show. No, I'm not that dumb, Brian.
we will leave it there. Congratulations on your new position.
Thank you.
And thank you for always providing such good and clear science for our listeners. We appreciate it a lot.
It's my pleasure. Thanks so much.